In today's episode, we're going to talk about why you still feel like garbage in perimenopause, even when you're on hormones. I'm Dr. Valerie from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. Well, that's quite the title there, why you feel like garbage.
I'm sure a lot of perimenopausal women can relate that sure. They feel like garbage, hence the question we're going to talk about here from Amber.
There's been some comments and some questions over the years where women don't feel that great. They're feeling fine. All of a sudden, you know, like a flip of the light switch, and all of a sudden they just feel horrible. So, again, this question came from Ask the Doctor. So you go to our website. Ask the Doctor, takes you to a little form, fill out your name and email, and the question comes right to her and I. We get quite a few of them. That way you can ask in sort of privacy. There is comments down below. We do get some comments there. If you don't feel comfortable putting your question down there, Ask the Doctor is a safe space to do that. Why don't you go ahead and read the question
sure,
from Amber?
Yeah, so Amber, so we always, like Dr. Mackey said, we change your name. And you actually made the print really big. I don't even think I need my glasses.
I did that on purpose. It's size 14 font. It's not like, you know, it's 18.
A tiny bit fuzzy, but no, I can read without my glasses. Okay. So question from Amber. Hi, help. Perimenopause has kicked my butt. My symptoms have been so terrible. I feel like it's really diminished my quality of life. I've not slept through the night consistently for over a year now. When the sleep disturbances started, I was on 100 milligrams of progesterone and increased up to 300 milligrams. The progesterone helped my sleep initially, but it seemed to wear off. I am now back to waking up multiple times in the night. Fatigue is horrible. Usually around 3 p.m., I feel like I could fall asleep. Brain fog makes me feel completely crazy. I can't remember names or even conversations sometimes. I've had cotton mouth, joint pain, low mood, low libido, all on and off for the past year. And most recently, I gained 10 to 15 pounds in a matter of 2 months. I've been the same weight, 110 pounds, since I was in eighth grade. So this is very depressing. It's all in my stomach and butt. I look pregnant. I have not gotten my period in 5 months, and I try to eat healthy, enough protein. I exercise, lift weights for the past 3 months regularly and get in my steps and every day. My OB most recently started me on the estradiol patch. It has not helped improve my symptoms in any way, 0.0375. My thyroid was tested and my doctor put me on Neva, 30 milligrams, and I have not noticed any positive changes since being on the thyroid med. I've been on this med for about 6+ months. I just feel like garbage. It's a vicious cycle. I want to be healthy and have a good quality of life, but not sleeping, and feeling fatigued and having this extra body weight doesn't help matters. Hoping you might have some insight. Thank you very much.
Well, that was quite the question. Not one that we haven't heard before. Pretty much she has like all the classic symptoms in perimenopause. So what are your thoughts? I mean, she's already doing some things that typically we would do as well. A little bit of thyroid, some progesterone, a little bit of estrogen, no period in 5 months. Those are lots of really good ideas, but she still doesn't feel very good. So what would you do with a case like this?
Well, definitely this is a common theme in perimenopause.
Oh, yeah.
Not just menopause, but in perimenopause. But that's where, you know, with the hormones and the prescriptions, they really do need to be individualized to people, like, you know, to Amber. I feel like some of these prescriptions are almost like a cookie cutter. Here's a patch. Here's a, progesterone. Take this. And then here, let's just throw some thyroid in there just to see what happens kind of thing.
Sure.
They said they tested her thyroid, so it must have been a little bit low possibly. I'm not sure. But I almost think that she's in that sort of space where she's going from perimenopause into menopause. She didn't say how old she was, but she hasn't had a period in 5 months.
Yeah. So you'd imagine she's probably at least in her late 40s to, if not, you know, early 50s.
Early 50s, possibly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she also, so no period for 5 months, and she's gained weight in the last 10 to 15 pounds in the last 2 months. Doesn't say how long she's been on the estradiol patch, because it said most recently my OB started me on the estradiol patch, and then she'd been on the Neva, which is a desiccated thyroid.
Yeah, NDT, yeah.
Yeah, natural thyroid. And that's been 6+ months. So there's kind of a lot of nuances going in here that would be good to pick apart. First of all, I'm thinking that possibly she's just newly into menopause.
Yeah.
She's not, you know, postmenopausal, obviously, but that newly into menopause that we want to kind of pick apart a little bit and also pick apart the hormones.
Sure, sure. Well, technically, because of the 5 months, you know, she's not, I would love to know what her FSH level is, right? I'd love to know how old she is and what her FSH level is. It's only been 5 months, so technically she's not in menopause. And it hasn't been, her FSH is, you know, who knows what it is. So you're right. She's right on that cusp of, you know, the full transition into menopause. So when you say that, though, her being on that, you know, that limbo land where you were at yourself not that long ago, what does that mean to you?
Well, so you think about in menopause, the hormones are just done. You know, no estrogen, no progesterone. The ovaries are pretty much tapped out at that point, and rightly so. But you think about with perimenopause is the progesterone is dropped. That I always talk about that. Progesterone always has dropped in perimenopause. But because the ovaries, you know, maybe the egg quality is declined, which happens, you know, with time with the ovaries aren't so responsive to the signals from the brain. So the brain, the pituitary, will secrete follicle stimulating hormone, FSH, to tell the ovaries, hey, make some estrogen. And because the ovaries aren't really responding to that brain signal and the estrogen doesn't come up, the brain is smart. It tries to compensate it, and it pumps out more FSH. And when you're in perimenopause as opposed to menopause, those ovaries might say, oh, okay, I got your signal. It pushes out a whole bunch of estradiol. And then later, it totally dives because the ovaries aren't consistent listening to the brain. So you have, so in perimenopause, you have the low levels of the progesterone, but you have these ups and downs, almost like a roller coaster coming down to that estradiol. And that right there can cause estrogen dominance, which can cause weight gain. It can also cause, you know, kind of that cortisol not to be buffered. So that, like she said, the weight is in her stomach and her bum is, that's probably a little bit with that cortisol going up. Mm-hmm. And then, well, let me, I see that you want, you have something you want to say on here.
No, I'm just listening.
What do you think about what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree completely. I mean, her not sleeping. So I would be curious when she started the patch, the weight gain. She's had a consistent weight, you know, for a very long time. Not sleeping and or the patch is going to promote some of that weight gain. So I'm wondering where that patch came in. If she gained the weight before the patch, that would be a sleep issue. You know, like I said, too much cortisol.
And probably that estrogen bouncing around.
Yeah. Or was the weight gain attributed to the patch, which, you know, we've seen many times, you know, that, you know, 8 to 12 pounds when you slap that thing on.
That is true no matter what dose. I know this is the lowest dose of the estradiol patch, but it's just one of those
things. I think
it's
an in-between one. I think 0.025 is the lowest. I think this is the – so there's 0.025, the 0.375, 0.05, and 0.1, yeah.
But it's still – even on those lower doses of patches, I still notice that when you – that I still notice women still get weight gain.
Oh, sure.
You know, they
of course.
The weight gain. Yeah. I think part of it is, of course, the water weight. So I'm thinking there's, because there's a lot to sort of unpack here. Like she said, she's on 300 milligrams of progesterone. You think that would make you tired because progesterone crosses the blood-brain barrier, stimulates the GABA receptors, relaxes you. In a perfect world, and in most cases, progesterone actually helps lower that cortisol level by stimulating GABA. It helps buffer in that cortisol. But in some cases, when women are really adrenally tapped or they're really stressed or they're under a lot of stress, that progesterone can actually convert into cortisol. So that cortisol, that might be happening here is 100 initially helped and then it didn't. And then she just raised it up to 300. That some of that progesterone, do you think it could be converting over to cortisol? And that's why she's waking up.
It certainly could be. Now she is. She's not sleeping for over a year. She's exercising multiple times a week. Usually in situations like this, I sort of tell them initially to tone down the exercise, maybe a little bit of walking or something to take some of that pressure off the adrenals. And also, too, she's eating protein, but is she eating enough calories overall? Because if she's not eating enough calories and exercising a lot, she's going to inadvertently increase cortisol because now she's at a sort of a chronic caloric deficit. So now in some ways she's trying to be healthy, but she could be sort of sabotaging herself, thinking she's doing something beneficial by lifting weights, but now it could really, you know, prop up that cortisol level and contributing to her not being able to sleep at night. So I think this is where these kind of cases are really challenging, right? Because you got to break it all down. It's a cortisol issue. It is an estrogen issue. It's a progesterone issue. Maybe a thyroid issue. Maybe not. I mean, you know as well as I do, for a woman in perimenopause, a little bit of progesterone and thyroid, and that usually helps them feel quite a bit better early on. But because she's, you know, closer to that menopausal part, it makes me think more that she needs more estrogen.
I would agree, but so there's, like I said, there's so many different parts and I want to just talk about all of it.
Yeah.
But I do feel like as a taking in as an individual, and I understand she's petite, putting on 15 pounds when you're little is uncomfortable.
Sure.
It's the difference between fitting into your pants and feeling really, you know, you can't, you know, it's really tight.
Of course.
So you also have to think about, you know, the body mass for the dosage. So 100 milligrams of progesterone is a good dose. You know, it's like a size medium. A lot of people are on 100 milligrams. But for somebody that's, you know, in their, you know, 110 to 120, maybe 125, because that's, you know, that's a petite stature, is 300 milligrams of progesterone.
That's a lot of progesterone.
That's a lot of progesterone, and you're supposed to take it at night. And so I'm thinking it's converting over to cortisol in the middle of the night. She's waking up throughout the night. But because of the dose of progesterone, it's supposed to be out of your system, mostly all out of your system by the morning, that it might not be completely out of her system in the morning, which could make you feel a little lethargic during the morning, and then you have to drink a bunch of coffee, which makes your cortisol go up even more, and then you push yourself, that she's, you know, definitely having kind of a roller coaster on that. So I think that's kind of an issue. And same with, I was mentioning about the estradiol patch. That's kind of a low dose, but I still feel like the estradiol patches cause weight gain, or definitely water weight. Definitely there's that puffiness that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's only, you know, 120, 125 pounds. That, of course, you'd want to put her on the lowest dose.
At least a starting point.
So I'm thinking it's not about the and like you said, she needs more estrogen, but that's like, I feel like she needs more like rhythmic estrogen, like the rhythmic dosing we're talking about. So one thing with the progesterone, if it were converting to cortisol, so maybe she's really stressed and whatnot, and it wants to go down that, the body thinks, oh, we're in a stressful situation. What can we do to rally and fight whatever war we're fighting?
Yeah.
That progesterone, instead of being reproductive, will turn into, you know, will turn into cortisol. Is probably, but if you were to cycle the progesterone, then I think that would kind of down regulate, or what I would say is maybe more upregulate the progesterone receptors, because her receptors are probably getting adapted. Progesterone receptors down regulate, and that progesterone has to do something. Because that's the whole caveat when it comes to hormones is, people think, oh, let me take the hormones and I'm going to lose all this weight and feel amazing. And hormones are great. They're great for your bones. They're great for your heart. They're great for your brain. But they can be a little like, you know, devious. They can turn into one thing, turn it into another.
Right.
So it's really following the pathway of where the hormones go in that particular individual.
Sure. Well, because she's newly into, you know, that limbo land between perimenopause and menopause, and we've both said before, that is the most difficult spot for a woman to be, right at the end of perimenopause, right at the beginning of menopause, and she's 5 months with no period, she's sort of like right there, right? That is both for the patient, all the things she's experiencing, she's got all the classic perimenopausal symptoms, but then also for the practitioner, this is the toughest. This is the what makes most doctors sort of cringe a little bit, because they don't really know how to help these types of cases very well. Hence why Amber is doing a lot of things, but she's not getting any results. I mean, you and I, you know, when your tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? You know, rhythmic dosing, but she's right at that perfect spot right before menopause. Almost, you know, who knows, she could be in menopause right now. If she goes another 7 months, technically she'd be in menopause. You know, she's at five right now, another 7 months without a period. You know, who knows, maybe next week she'll have it already.
Or 12 months in one day, she'll have it.
Yeah, I mean, right.
They always say 12 months and you're in menopause. I really think it's really a phase. It's like puberty.
Sure,
it's not like all
of
a sudden.
But yeah, the fact that she's skipped it for 5 months, that means her estrogen levels is already dropping off. You know, so what the rhythmic dosing sort of does there is it raises her estrogen in a way that her body can sort of handle it, but it minimizes that progesterone. And again, sort of creating that balance, you know, all over again. And then that should be a little buffer against that cortisol. She gets to sleep. Now she's getting restful sleep every night. Now the exercise becomes synergistic and things start to go back to the way she wants.
I agree. I do think doing the rhythmic dosing would be the best with her, because a lot of her symptoms are talking about kind of low estrogen, like how she's saying, you know, her joints hurt, you know, when estrogen drops, You can have dry eye, dry mucous membranes, dry, you know, your joint lubrication goes down. She gained all her weight in the stomach. That sounds a little bit like, you know, like that cortisol, because estrogen is supposed to buffer cortisol. Mm-hmm. There's something going on with that progesterone there that we'd probably want to.
Well, she says, I have cotton mouth, joint pain, low mood, low libido over the past year. But I also think that that could be a little bit of too much, like you said, a little bit too much cortisol stimulation. Yeah. You know, so how do you change that, right? Now, she's not sleeping, so automatically her cortisol is going to go up. That's where you're using estrogen as a way to sort of push down that cortisol. Because otherwise, if she's not sleeping, then that cortisol just stays high all the time. And of course, you're not going to have any energy to exercise or do anything else if you're not sleeping at night. So, you know, usually when we work with a patient the first time, the first month is working on temperature issues and sleep. Right? Because if you can't sleep well, it's been over a year for her, it is going to have a huge trickle-down effect on everything else that you're doing or how you feel, you know, the rest of the day or, you know, week or month or year. So I think that that's, you know, that's, how do you do that? You know, that, I mean, there's some supplements, you know, there's, you know, things that we use, but in her case, she's already doing some progesterone. If that's not helping, you know, the supplementation might not be really effective either.
Well, I was thinking more so about backing down on her progesterone dose,
right?
And then maybe in, of course, this is not for medical advice for Amber, but in a case such as this, my experience, I would back down on that progesterone. Mm-hmm. I would probably test her pregnenolone, which is a hormone that comes from the adrenal glands, and then supplement pregnenolone. Pregnenolone can convert into progesterone if the body wants to go in that direction.
Right.
And perimenopause, pregnenolone is a really nice start when you're before jumping into progesterone if you want to go quite there. So mm-hmm. I would probably start with that. Let's, you know, I do think the rhythmic dosing ultimately would be a really good transition for her, but going from all of this to all of that, her body might actually get shocked a little bit because it's like, oh my gosh, how many baseballs are you going to throw at me and what am I going to have to handle? And so it's almost like I'd dial back a little bit and then maybe even do like a really low dose bias to start with an estradiol.
Why would you do that?
Because sometimes some women will have a histamine reaction when you add in estrogen too quickly. It doesn't last long, but it's not fun to feel all puffy and you know. And
but even going from you don't think going from the patch to bias is going to make her feel worse?
It probably would, but I would start low and work, go up. I wouldn't say it'd make her feel worse. She'd probably feel better because we can try to detoxify some of these metabolites out, start kind of at basic, add some, you know, because I always say it's better to start less and add your, go up slow rather than overdosing of a good thing, you know, too much of a good thing and then feel like crap and then have to back out of that for all the side effects. And that's what I kind of feel like is happening with Amber is like, let's just give you more. Let's just do this. Yeah. And then now we're at that point where you got to back out of a lot of the, you know, areas she's gone in. So I would probably do that and then maybe transition over to the rhythmic dosing or maybe start on a lower rhythmic dosing.
Yeah, below
the progesterone cream instead of the capsule. Yeah, yeah. So there really is so many ways. Like I'm thinking of all these things to do with her. There is a solution here. It's just trying to find the right solution with her and not being too pushy, you know, with her system. Because I do feel like when women, their ovaries are still working a little bit, not completely into menopause, you don't want to bully them too much.
Yeah.
Because then they'll just rebel. Like, for example, which I don't know if I wanted to ask you about this, you know, progesterone can convert into aldosterone. It's not likely to do that. It's not really supposed to do that because progesterone is supposed to sort of buffer aldosterone receptors so that the aldosterone actually can go down. That's why progesterone can act a little bit like taking off some of the water weight. Progesterone's really good for that. Right. But in some cases, it can cause the water weight, and I think that's because it can convert, you know, into that aldosterone. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so just for a little background there. So cortisol as a hormone, a steroid hormone, is classified as a glucocorticoid. So it's a steroid that affects your blood sugar. So cortisol's main job in the body is to raise blood sugar. You know, of course, it's there for fight or flight and stress and all those things, but its main job is to get us from meal to meal. So we have breakfast, 8 hours later we eat dinner or something, whatever it is, cortisol is rising the entire time. That's why if she's at a caloric deficit, and she's exercising a bunch, that inevitably is also going to potentially raise cortisol. So that's why, you know, being mindful of protein's one thing, but being mindful of calories, especially when you're exercising, is also, because, you know, her joint pain and some of those things, that almost sounds a little bit like overtraining, right? So too much exercise, too much cortisol. And now that's why it'd be really nice to see what her DHEA sulfate and her testosterone is. Honestly, even her pregnenolone level, because if those numbers are low, now you know that your adrenals are sort of tapped out. Okay, when you're training and you're lifting weights on a regular basis, you'd expect those women, or men for that matter, when they're in a good rest training sort of volume, so intensity and volume is sort of balanced, you'd expect that their pregnenolone, DHEA, and testosterone would actually be at a good level. It might not be like high-end normal, but at least it would be at least normal. It wouldn't be a testosterone below 10. It wouldn't be a DHEA sulfate below 100. Your pregnenolone would be reasonable, right? That's where you get a clue that someone might be overtraining a little bit. And if you're not sleeping and you're exercising and you're under eating, that's sort of a really bad combination. Okay. That's why when you're training on a regular basis, more than, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 times a week, your calories need to go up over time, not go down. Because when you're in a deficit and training at the same time, you're sort of sealing your own fate at some point. Your body just has to, it almost like creates a little bit more of a stress response. Mm-hmm. And I think some of her symptoms, especially not the sleeping part, because that even exacerbates it even more. So I would say, you know, her tone down some of the training for a little bit until the sleep gets under control. And then she comes back to it. And now she's, you know, she's kind of caught up on that sleep debt. Now she'd be better, you know, better to go back to training and she can recover properly.
So you think, like we were talking about, the cortisol is elevated. So that's kind of like the wrench in the system here, but you don't think maybe that progesterone could be converting into aldosterone and causing some water weight?
Sure. Yeah. But like you said, she's on 300 milligrams of progesterone. We have very few women. Once you get to 200, if 200 doesn't work, going higher than 200, we don't really, especially for
she's tiny too,
especially for a petite woman like that. I mean, at that point it, you know, and we've seen it too, where it works initially, works for, you know, roughly for 1 to 3 months, and then it seems like it just stops working, right? They get a little bit of a sleep response, and then for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's because it's a static dose, so those receptors downregulate. That's why the rhythmic part might be actually worthwhile, because now you maintain some of that receptor function. But at 200 milligrams for a petite woman, if that doesn't work, then you know that it's not a progesterone issue. It's something else that's sort of driving the insomnia at that point.
Yeah, no, so I totally agree. So that's where I feel like this is a little bit too, maybe for Amber, it's a little too cookie cutter for her. Like, she really needs, you know, an individualized, you know, protocol, whether it's the rhythmic dosing or backing up, getting, you know, detoxing a little bit. What's, you know, I was kind of going through this is, I do feel like, you know, the estrogen isn't right. Like, her estrogen is too low.
Yeah, of course.
We know that.
Just because she hasn't had a period for 5 months.
That could be even, like, a lot of women, they don't even know they're having hot flashes at night. It's because they're, you know, they're unconscious because they're asleep and they have these flashes, but then they wake up. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I awake? And then when you get hot like that, that'll cause your cortisol to go up. So I think there's just really more about, she just needs a little more fine tuning with that HRT. And then dial back a little bit and look more at the adrenals. Because, like I was saying, pregnenolone can convert into progesterone, but can also convert into DHEA, which can convert into testosterone.
Right.
So, and then testosterone can convert into estradiol, but that's not going to do that with a menopausal woman. Maybe with, the testosterone usually aromatizes when you're doing men testosterone, so much. So I wouldn't see that happening. But I could see, you know, going back, kind of looking at those adrenal glands, redoing, kind of refining her actual HRT of progesterone and estrogen, maybe finding, like she said, she went on the estradiol patch and nothing changed. So, you know, get rid of that and go back to the drawing board. Yeah. You know, let's change that up. And then the thyroid, I do feel like thyroid can be really nice for women. I do thyroid all the time. I take thyroid myself because I'm hypothyroid. But I think finding the right thyroid, because I do like the natural desiccated thyroid. I think it's good to take something natural, but it's an instant release. And it does have the T4 and the T3 in there, and then other way they call it T1, T3, whatnot. But it does have that T4 and T3 as a 4-to-1 ratio, 4 micrograms of T4 to 1 microgram of T3. but it's an instant release that somebody that's already not sleeping that might be more on the anxious side, I don't like to do instant release thyroid at that point. We would probably, when you agree, go back and maybe do maybe a sustained release or kind of maybe take, there's just so many variables going on in here. She's like a moving target. It's like we've got to remove some of the variables and add them in so we know what's working and what's not.
Well, I don't think you have to strip them all down and start one by one. Sure. You and I have seen cases like this many times, and we're trying not to give too much medical advice on YouTube, right?
It's just an experience.
This is just educational stuff, but this is about as tough as it gets, right? These kind of cases, not sleeping, I mean, that's enough to drive a year plus with no sleep. That's enough to drive anybody crazy, okay? And it's really challenging, for the practitioner to be able to sort of figure that out without having to resort to, sleep medications of some sort, which most of our patients are just not really interested in doing.
Oh, gosh, no.
You know, or even having to resort to, edibles or something, which, some women have to do that just because they can't sleep. But this one, there's when you kind of read between the lines on this one, like I said, there's a strategy there that I think could actually work. I think, of course, a case like this where they don't feel very good at all, that rhythmic dosing, now granted, it's not the right fit for everyone, but in cases like this, they usually turn it around relatively quickly and they start to feel pretty good.
No, and I bet you anything, this is just completely side note because I see this all the time and I know you do too, is if you checked Amber's or somebody like Amber's blood work, like you ran her cholesterol or CMP or sugar, all that stuff, I bet you it's beautiful. And that's probably why the doctors are like, you're so healthy.
Yeah,
and
then
she's like, why do I feel like garbage? But you see that in perimenopause. This is the perfect time to work on this because she is little. So she went from 110 up to 120 up to 125. She starts moving into menopause and it turns into 130, 135. Yeah, yeah. That's where you'll start to see the risk of insulin resistance, the risk of chronic disease, age-related diseases. So I can understand her saying, help me, because this is the time when we want to work on this before it gets to like, oh gosh, her blood sugar's up. We got to reverse all this.
Well, just not sleeping alone puts her at risk for, insulin resistance, even though she's so petite anyways. I mean, that's why the sleeping part is sort of the most important thing, for anything, and let alone mood and energy and whatever. But if she's going to continue to keep training, which we all know how important exercise is, but that's got to be done sort of in the right priority. We don't want to tell people not to exercise, but if you're not sleeping, you have to prioritize your stress and your exercise. Sleep has to be number one until your stress is reduced. Exercise has to be sort of put in its place. Sleep is number one. If stress goes up, your sleep goes down, then exercise has to be sort of marginalized for a while until the sleep quality is improved. I guarantee you, I've always asked people, if you had to give your sleep a letter grade, A to an F, okay, what do you think hers would be? It sounds like hers would be an F at this point, right? Indeed. So we want to get them, and most patients that have come to us over the years, their sleep is somewhere between F to a C. Okay? Very, very rarely do you have a woman that's in perimenopause or menopause and their sleep is a B or higher. Okay? I mean, very rare do you have an A. We're trying to get them from an F to a B. Right. B is reasonable.
B is good.
How would you describe a sleep quality of a B letter grade? How would you describe that?
You can fall asleep easily, so no problem. You sleep for about 4 hours and you might, just because we're girls and our bladders are small, you might go to the bathroom because you drink too much water that night, or you don't, or you might just wake up, roll over and go back to sleep. That's really what it is. I mean, it's very rare that I've met a female that they close their eyes at 10 o'clock and they don't open them till 6.
You've never done that since we've been married, since I was a kid.
I didn't even do that when I was little. My parents used to lock my door when I was 3.
Shame on them.
A 3-year-old wandering around trying to get into mischief. And trust me, I was a little mischievous, I think.
Well, what 3-year-old isn't mischievous? You've never slept through I don't think you've ever slept through the night all the way through. Not that I can remember. We've been together, 24 years, almost a quarter of a, it's quarter of a century almost. But I don't think, I don't think you've ever, I will say though, I don't know if you've noticed or not, because you've been doing the rhythmic dosing now for just over 6 months. You sleep way better now than you ever have.
Oh, I do. I do. I still wake up, maybe go to the bathroom, but I'm notorious for drinking a lot of water at night.
It drives me nuts. I don't know why you do that. It drives me nuts. You're like getting ready to go to bed, and you got like two glasses of, I'm like, what are you doing?
They just make me feel better to know that they're there. You know, it's but it is true. I have slept a lot better, and that's not because because I never really got hot flashes. Going into menopause, not really. But I didn't sleep good. I never really slept. You just had
some brain fog, and you got really, really irritable. Really bitchy.
Oh, really?
I'm just teasing you. I'm just teasing you.
But no, no, I do. I will say that I do sleep pretty good now.
Yeah, yeah. It's really noticeable because it would be frustrating because I usually sleep pretty good. Now my sleep isn't as good as it used to be, but I used to sleep pretty good. And then you'd get up a bunch of times or night, wake me up all the time. So then my sleep would get disrupted because you're waking me up to go into the bathroom. But now I don't really even hardly, maybe my sleep quality is better because I don't really notice you getting up at all to go to the bathroom. So.
Just when the dog kicks me in the head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's a little violent when she's.
Yeah, we have a poodle with really long legs and she'll just, and she's got to sleep on the bed, right? No.
Well, she wouldn't sleep on the floor. She's a poodle. Yeah, she's a little violent when she's trying to move, and she's pushing a paw. I've gotten a paw in my neck before, and she's kicking me in the back. And I mean, it's adorable. She'll like her and I spoon all the time. But anyways, this is a really challenging case. I feel bad for Amber because I know we've just had so many women over the years like her. And honestly, you and I don't even have all the answers, right? We have some ideas that may be helpful, but even then, sometimes you still can't crack those cases. But the secret weapon, the rhythmic dosing in a case like this, I think that's at least something. Now, because she, like you said, she's so petite, probably you would start below baseline and then kind of gradually work it up. Because where she is, you know that the lack of estrogen is sort of driving a lot of that a lot of that problem. Clearly, it's not a lack of progesterone, her taking 300 milligrams. So I think you're right about that.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, changing that up. And that's why it's so nice to work with your practitioner, because I can understand she's got her OB. It looks like maybe she has another doctor prescribing the thyroid. You know, they're busy, so she's, you know, got to get into the OB. I can't get in. I'm not feeling good. They change this up, and then they leave, and they can't get back in and not sure what to do, and it got to go, it's just like, that's the unfortunate thing sometimes in healthcare is it's really hard to, to find a doctor that you can just work with. Like, I remember your name.
She's got some urgency because she feels miserable. But, all the practitioners, everyone's busy. We're busy all the time. So I can see where they get really frustrated and just not being able, like you said, she's trying to do her part. She's trying to, eat right and exercise and all the things, but she still just doesn't feel very good. So. I definitely have some empathy for her. I think we teased this one apart pretty good. Do you have anything else to any final closing thoughts for Amber?
No, this is great. I appreciate everybody that asks questions. Anybody have a question on their mind, please bring it to us. We love to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. It gives us an unlimited amount of episodes that we can record. Yeah. So you keep asking, we'll keep talking. So hopefully you enjoy the podcast. Again, comments down below if you're on YouTube. Otherwise, you can visit our website, again, Ask the Doctor,
The website's Progress Your Health, and then click on Ask the Doctor.
Yeah, yeah, Progress Your Health, Ask the Doctor, yeah. We could, I'm sure that's domain
I'm
is
sure
taken.
I'm sure that's taken, yeah.
But yeah, progressyourhealth.com, and then the tab up at the top says Ask the Doctor. You can ask your question there. So until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.